Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. We're bringing you a special news roundup show devoted to environmental issues in our Native communities as we wrap up Earth Day Week. We'll learn more about a water quality situation at a school on the Navajo Nation. We'll also talk about a recycling prize awarded to some Cochiti Pueblo students. And we'll learn more about solar energy on the Pine Ridge Reservation. That's all right after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Cherokee Nation is filing suit against leading pharmaceutical companies in tribal court over what lawyers say is a prescription opioid epidemic. The suit filed Thursday faults six companies, including McKesson, Cardinal Health, and AmerisourceBergen, with flooding the region with addictive pills. Cherokee Attorney General Todd Hembree says the companies named in the suit should have been suspicious about the massive quantities of drugs distributed within the 14 counties that make up the Cherokee Nation.
They knew or should have known that they were flooding the market in the Cherokee Nation. And that's not just the doctor's fault. The distributors and the retailers and the pharmacists have that responsibility to stop that flow also.
The suit also names leading pharmacy chains Walgreens, CVS Health, and Walmart. The suit claims the amount of drugs like hydrocodone and oxycodone issued in 2015 averages as much as 720 pills for every opioid prescription drug user in the Cherokee Nation. Hembree says, in addition to the tragedy of overdose deaths, there is no aspect of Cherokee Nation services that isn't touched by opioid addiction.
Millions upon millions of dollars we spend in addiction treatment and the health concerns that come from addiction. There are broken families because of this. It is a multi-occurrence on a monthly basis where we have to take custody of an Indian child because of opioid addiction.
The state of West Virginia and some cities and counties have filed similar suits. This is the first tribal suit taking on drug companies. Hembree says the suit is an exercise in sovereignty and the legitimacy of tribal law.
One of the benefits at the end of the day is the recognition that tribal courts deserve.
Cherokee Principal Chief Bill John Baker issued a statement saying he fears the opioid epidemic is the next great challenge for a nation that has already endured disease, removal from their homeland, and termination. Advocates for missing Aboriginal women in Canada are expressing disappointment after officials canceled or delayed several consultation meetings. Dan Karpinchuk reports the consultations were part of the lead-up to the national inquiry on the issue.
The delays of the regional advisory meetings came after some families and advocacy groups complained that the inquiry process has failed to reach out to families of the victims. Those meetings were designed to hear advice from families and groups about what issues should be covered when the actual inquiry begins. But the inquiry says the regional advisory meetings need to be reformulated, but with little explanation as to why. Meanwhile, the head of the Native Women's Association of Canada, Francine Joe, says while the delay is disappointing to some, it could be a positive turning point if it means more and better communications with families and survivors.
I do hope that the commissioners come back to this in the next few weeks stronger and more resolute in their promises to these families that, you know, this is going to be for the families, about the families, and in memory of the women that we've lost.
New dates have not yet been set for the advisory meetings in Edmonton and Thunder Bay. The first public hearing is to take place in Whitehorse at the end of May. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A flurry of political and legal decisions is keeping the fate of the Eastern Band of Cherokee's elected leader up in the air. The tribal council was scheduled to proceed with impeaching Principal Chief Patrick Lambert this week, but a tribal court decision delayed that vote by at least 10 days. Also this week, Lambert called a grand council meeting. The Smoky Mountain News in Bryson City, North Carolina, reports that body, with more than 1,300 enrolled members, voted overwhelmingly to dismiss the tribal council's impeachment actions. It's the first grand council assembly in more than two decades. It's not clear what authority that vote holds. It's the latest in an ongoing political battle over more than a year. The Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe is offering a tuition incentive for incoming freshmen who complete a bachelor's degree in 4 years. The IAIA announces it will rebate students' tuition and the cost of books during their senior year. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting STEM careers since 1990 as a corporate partner of the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at aises.org/scholarships.
Support by Bears Ears National Monument, created to honor tribes and protect traditional access. More information, including the latest news about the monument, at protectbearsears.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. Tomorrow is Earth Day. The celebration started in the 70s as a way to remind people that we need to take care of our planet. This week, we've been focusing on environmental issues that affect Native nations. Today, we're going to hear about a solar panel project on the Pine Ridge Reservation. We're also going to hear about some Cochiti Pueblo students who got an award for recycling. We'll head almost all the way up to the North Pole to hear about a struggle over the seismic testing in an Inuit community that they are fighting. But first, we're going to talk about water quality issues on the Navajo Nation. If you'd like to weigh in on any of these topics or in another environmental issue that you've been following, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now is Laurel Morales. She is a senior field correspondent for KJZZ's Fronteras Desk in Flagstaff, Arizona. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Laurel.
Hi, Monica.
Thanks so much for joining us today. So you recently had an article about a pretty serious water situation going on at a school called St. Michael's. Tell us a little bit about it.
So the water at St. Michael's, it comes out black, brown, and yellow, depending on the day or which sink you turn on. It also smells like rotten eggs, and it tastes bad. But technically, it meets EPA primary standards. And the kids who go to St. Michael's, it's St. Michael's Association for Special Education, they have the most severe developmental disabilities on the Navajo Nation. And so a lot of them are medically fragile, and many are fed through tubes and have equipment that needs to be cleaned. So the staff there uses a lot of bottled water, and that gets expensive. St. Michael's spent almost $3,000 last year on bottled water and another $17,000 on the tap water because they use it still to wash dishes, bathe, and do laundry. And it's just a really big cost for a school with so many expenses.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. So what you're saying is the water looks bad, it smells bad, but it still meets the standards. Is that right? How is that possible? I mean, many of us are used to turning on our faucet and getting clear water. Usually when you turn on the faucet and some different color comes out, that's a sign that something is wrong.
Right. So the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority, their operations supervisor told me that the water there comes from an alluvial well or a shallow well near a spring. And because the Navajo Nation is so big, it's the size of West Virginia, about 27,000 square miles, these pipes are far apart from each other, and the tap isn't turned on enough. So apparently the water sits stagnant, and that's why it gets this strange color. There's an organization that's helping the school get a new water filtration system. They say that the water is so bad that it could have also corroded the pipes, and that may be why it's discolored.
Yeah, it still seems pretty interesting, the idea, though, that something could smell bad and still be safe to drink. I mean, are the water quality standards so low, or, you know, what is the circumstances of that?
Yeah, so the EPA has two standards for drinking water, primary and secondary. And the primary standard, where utilities filter out all the contaminants that could hurt you, that's the standard that's required by law. The secondary standard, where water managers get rid of taste, color, and smell, and that's sort of considered aesthetic, that's voluntary. But it also, you know, if your water doesn't meet secondary standards, it means a lot of people aren't going to drink it. But the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority tests the water at St. Michael's monthly, and they say it meets national primary drinking water standards, and it's technically safe to drink.
But the staff don't feel comfortable using it because of the way that it looks.
Right, and smells and tastes.
Wow. Wow, that's really incredible, especially considering the needs of the students that they are serving in that circumstance.
Right, right.
And so what does the Navajo Nation say that they're going to do to remedy this situation? I know that on reservations, Indian Health Service, IHS, is responsible for clean water. Are there any efforts to fix it?
Not at this point. I mean, the utility that Navajo Tribal Utility Authority, it's owned by the Navajo Nation, but it operates independently by revenue generated by customers. And they say they can't charge their customers more to make the water meet those secondary standards I talked about. So that's where this organization, Dig Deep, comes in. Someone who volunteered at the school over a year ago got online and to try and find someone to help them fix this problem. And she saw that there's this nonprofit organization out of Los Angeles that's been helping Navajo communities dig wells and get clean running water. So because more than a third of the Navajo Nation doesn't have any running water at all. And so this organization, Dig Deep, has been helping different communities. So this volunteer contacted them, and now Dig Deep is raising the money, about $100,000, to build a new water filtration system. And they think they may also have to replace the pipes.
Mm. Wow. Well, that's really interesting. Laurel, are there other water issues that you are looking into on the Navajo Nation, or any particular things about this story that you'll be following up on?
Well, there's always, I've been covering the uranium issue, the cleanup of the long legacy of uranium mining on the Navajo Nation. And there is a group that's been studying whether uranium is still found in babies born today. Indeed it is at higher levels than most. And so I continue to keep tabs on that study to find out, because they haven't been able to pinpoint whether it's in the water, whether it's in the air, whether, you know, there were people on the Navajo Nation who built their houses out of materials near these uranium mines where the uranium levels were so high, it was causing many health problems, fatal health problems. So that is one issue that I'm continuing to follow up on.
Absolutely. Well, we definitely would love to have you on the show again and share some of these findings. Laurel, where can folks find you online?
I'm on Twitter. I'm at Laurel Gwyn, Gwyn, and fronterasdesk.org.
All right. Laurel, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I know that you are on vacation in Nevada, and so we appreciate you taking time out of your vacation to do a little bit of work.
You're welcome. It's an important issue, so I'm glad to be able to help.
We'll put a link to Laurel's article about this issue at St. Michael's School on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. If you've got something you'd like to share about it, give us a call right now. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, let's go to the Coche du Pueblo. Joining us now is Gene Cahey. He is an environmental technician for the Department of Natural Resources for Coche du Pueblo, and he's also a member of the Pueblo. Also, welcome to Native America Calling, Gene.
Good morning to everybody.
It's great to have you. Also joining us is Mara Matheson. She's an English-speaking elementary teacher at the Caras Children's Learning Center. Welcome, Mara.
Good morning.
Mara, let's start with you. Recently, you and your students won first place in the community division of the 2016 Recycle Bowl, the competition that's sponsored by Keep America Beautiful. Tell us, what's this competition all about?
Well, truthfully, it was Gene who got us involved in this, and he came to our class the previous year. We're a Montessori school, so we have children for more than 1 year. So he had already laid the groundwork with the students about what is the importance of recycling and taking care of the earth. And so then in the fall, in October, November, the Keep America Beautiful Association sponsors this Recycle Bowl, and we let all of our families and the Pueblo and the communities that are adjacent know what we were doing, and we spent a lot of time sorting plastics and cardboard and glass and all sorts of things, and then we turned in all our recycling slips that indicate how much we had collected, and lo and behold, come March, we found out that we had won nationally.
That's pretty fantastic. And I think I read that the people who came in second place didn't even come close to the amount of recyclables that you collected. Is that right?
Well, that's true. I don't know about their amount, but our secret is that we have a small school. And so for our 5 students in our elementary classroom, they, on average, collected over 2,000 pounds of recycling materials, whereas, like you say, the second place folks only collected about 300 pounds per person.
Wow, that's a lot. Gene, when you went to the classroom to talk to the students, I mean, we're talking about little kids here, right? Preschool age up to age 5, is that right? Gene, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very young students. What did you share with them about recycling?
Well, we had 4 different classes with the kids, and of course, being that small, we had to come up with ways to keep them interested. So I started off with PowerPoint presentations that they had to get up and actually do a lot of physical contact with different animals and the environmental issues and stuff like that. Then we took field trips and to reinforce what we were teaching. So, like, our first class was on trash talk. Second one, we did recycling, and then we did reuse, and we even went to Albuquerque to one of the savers and talked with them, and they had a tour of the whole complex, how people bring in stuff. They do sorting and then resale. So the kids really got, they really got a lot of information. We took them to Friedman's Recycling Compound in Albuquerque, so they got to see the material being lifted with a forklift, dumped, and separated. And so they really got a lot of information. And so that's how we started off with recycling here, and I had to create my own PowerPoint presentations because I called all over to different pueblos to see if any of them dealt with little kids before, and I wasn't able to come up with anything, so I had to try to come up with something that's interactive for the kids, like I said, to keep their attention.
And was it mostly in English or in Caras?
This one here was both, but it was mainly in the English portion of the classes, because these are 5, 6, and 7. The Keras only is for the pre-K. That's a totally different class.
I see. Is there a word for recycling in Keras?
Not really specifically. Not a specific word for that. There might be different phrases, but not a general word.
And Gene, how did the students respond to these activities? Were you hearing from them a lot about, interest in this topic?
I noticed a lot of them were saying, "Why my mother throws away this, and I keep telling her not to throw it away, and my aunts and my grandmas, you know, they tell on them, you know," and so they're taking this home, and so it's really neat to hear them. And even when we were doing this competition, some of the townspeople from Cochiti Lake would bring over different cardboard, and they asked me, "Is this corrugated or not?" And I would tell them, "Well, let's go ask one of the children." And so we'd bring them out, and the kids will look at it, and they'll tell them, "No, this is corrugated because you can see the weave in between the cardboard," or "This is not." And so they would be the ones teaching. And so they really learned a lot.
Mara, have you incorporated this into your lessons? Like, are you finding a way to sort of meld the science of recycling and other things that you want to be teaching in the classroom?
We have, to some extent. When we were in the throes of the project, we did a whole experience of making paper from recycled paper, so, you know, tearing up the paper and making new pulp, basically, and so we created our own paper in our classroom, and the kids read some books about recycling and then tried to create an acrostic poem out of the alphabet of recycling. So, yeah, they've been reading about it and writing about it, and they really enjoyed their trips to the various places. We also, through Gene's office and through some other grants, we have gotten a grant to have a raised bed garden, and so the kids have also been planting and looking at the seeds and how they grow. We had a year-round a winter garden even of kale and other things that the kids planted and tended, and so we're really trying to expose them to all aspects of care for the earth.
Absolutely. So do you have any fun activities planned for Earth Day, or did you do something? Are you doing something in the class today?
We actually are not in school today. We're still on our spring break, but children are going to come on Monday, and we're going to do our spring planting in the raised bed. We're doing it in conjunction with the Cochiti Prevention Office, and we're going to try to incorporate as much language and Keras language and also the community folks as possible in the planting and the care for the raised beds.
That's fantastic. Today is our monthly news roundup show. We're focusing on environmental issues. If you've got something you'd like to share, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Let's take a quick call. We've got Sarah in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Sarah. What would you like to share?
About a comment on recycling. I just heard a tip on the radio that people throw the plastic bags, you know, the films, the grocery bags into the recycling bin. And what happens is it gets all tangled up and caught up when they're separating it. So I was it's best to take it to the grocery store where they just deal with plastic bags and films only. So I wonder if that's true. It sounds like it's true.
You know? Yeah, it kind of does, Sarah. The other thing I would say, too, is like bring your own bags and you can avoid the plastic bags entirely. What do you think about that?
Well, you know what? I try to do that. In fact, I have those insulated that keeps the food cold. I have those bags, but there's a lot of times when I'm running around and I wind up buying stuff and then I have no bags. So I wind up using the plastic bags. So then that's the times that I have the plastic bags accumulated. But you could recycle those, but you want to keep them together at the grocery stores and don't throw them in into the recycling bin because it'll get tangled up in the machine when they're going through the separators.
All right. Sarah, thanks so much for giving us a call from Albuquerque, tuned in on KUNM. Jean, did you have many discussions with the students about what could be recycled and what could not be recycled? I imagine that's a pretty big discussion. I know when I've lived with other people and I find things thrown in the recycling bin that do not belong there, it's kind of a pet peeve of mine. Like wooden chopsticks one time I fished out of a recycling bin. But Jean, did you talk much with your students about this?
Yes, that was one of the second classes that we had when we started getting into recycling. I brought over a huge bag of clean trash. And so by clean trash, you know, I made sure that it wasn't already disposed of in the trash can or anything. So like with diapers, I had to take a clean diaper, roll it up, and pretend that it was dirty and that kind of stuff. And so I dumped everything out on the floor, and the kids started separating what was plastic, what was cardboard, what was glass, aluminum, and then again, what does New Mexico recycle? And so we separated again, like in that categories. Because right now in New Mexico, there is no glass recycling. So I know a lot of people have glass products, and they're always asking me, what do we do with this? What do we? You know, and I tell them, well, for now, it's just trash. You know, we don't recycle that. Let's see. Oh, one of the other things, too, that I wanted to let everybody know that when we started this competition, I had to call up the recyclable committee for the guidelines and ask them in this community division, because we have a lot of Indian tribes over here, and we do consider ourselves a huge community, and would that be legal? And they said yes. So what I did was I encouraged a lot of the other environmental departments throughout New Mexico to contribute their recyclables to us, and they did, and so that's how we were able to get the numbers up. And when I looked into the history of this recyclable, there was probably five other schools within New Mexico that were always participating into it, but never won it. And so right now, KCLC and, you know, the rest of everybody else that contributed, we were planning on putting New Mexico in the news by, you know, recycling. And so we did. And so anyway, our plan is to keep this competition in New Mexico from here on out. Before, it was East Coast and West Coast that were always winning it, and no more. It's staying here.
So New Mexico will be the reigning champions of recycling, and all starting at the Cochiti Pueblo. That's pretty fantastic. Jean and Mara, we're about to go to a break. If you could just hang on for a few minutes during the break, I want to just ask you a few more questions about the kids and recycling. Today is our monthly news roundup show. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. The Resilience Indigenous Arts Experience features Native musicians, artists, fashion designers, and poets in Albuquerque, New Mexico. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk with the founder about the event that brings together and celebrates dozens of Indigenous artists from many nations. We hope you'll join us.
Hey, 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 young Ashoto Tahe, Shoto Tahe, Shoto Tahe, hey, 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 Shoto Tahe, Shoto Tahe, Shoto Tahe, hey, 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 Shot Atot El Zech Oshnilene, hey, hey. Shot atot if zech or schnellene. Hey, ah, hey. Shotota hey. Shotota hey. Shotota hey. Hey, 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 hey. Shotota hey. Shotota hey. Shotota hey. Hey, 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 hey.
I'm Michael, a Tlingit and a native of Alaska. Some people in my tribe call me a ghost walker. That's because smoking gave me COPD. That's a disease that makes it harder and harder to breathe, and you can die. My COPD is so bad, my doctor gave me 5 years to live, if I'm lucky. That's why I'm called a ghost walker. And this is the path I have to walk down. My lungs keep getting worse. My chances of getting transplants are shrinking. And the time I have to spend with my family and all of the people I love is slipping away. This is what's left of my life now because of smoking. My tip for you is to quit smoking now and live your life as a person, not as a walking ghost.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We're glad you've chosen to spend a little bit of your day with us. This week, we've been focusing on environmental issues that affect Indian country. It's a subject that comes up frequently on Native America Calling. You can visit NativeAmericaCalling.com to take a look at our archive. Some of the topics we've covered in the past include a proposed copper mine at Oak Flat, the Back 40 mine in Michigan, how climate change affects sacred sites, and of course, the battle over the Dakota Access Pipeline. Today is our news roundup. If you want to get in on the conversation, the number is 1-800-996-2848. Before the break, we were talking with Gene Cahey. He's an environmental technician for the Department of Natural Resources at Cochiti Pueblo, and Mara Matheson, she is the English-speaking elementary teacher at the Caras Children's Learning Center, and they were sharing with us that they just recently won a recycling award for activities collecting recycling among their students in their communities. Jean, anything else you'd like to leave us with about teaching kids recycling and what it has contributed to your community?
Well, in our village here, we didn't really do any recycling just as of yet. We're still trying to straighten out our solid waste issues that we have. And so we figured that starting with the little kids, that by teaching them recycling, that they would be able to take that back home and educate their parents, their older siblings. And so that's, so far, that's what we've seen that they're doing, and so it's been working pretty well, and we're really surprised and happy that it's continuing on. We do get support from our leaders, the governors, and they do have an interest in recycling, and the kids also, so they've been really supportive, and the same thing with our tribal council. And so again, one of the reasons why I'm working with the KCLC is because they are a non-for-profit school, and so I'm trying to get them recognition also, you know, and so other people out there that can contribute in any which ways, you know, they do have a website that you can go to, and I'll let Mara talk more on that.
Yeah, Mara, we just have just a minute or so before we move on to our next topic, but we'll put a link to the Caras Children's Learning Center on our website. And anything else you'd like to share about specifically about recycling?
Well, I think that even though I'm the English-speaking teacher, there is a Caras-speaking teacher. There are several Caras-speaking teachers in our classroom. Because our classroom is a dual language immersion classroom, and I know that the Caras speaking teachers find that recycling and the principles about recycling are totally compatible with cultural practices and traditions. And so it's been a really important way to link the children to the language and to the culture and to the traditions that they come from. And the other thing I would just say quickly is to invite anybody who wants to join us up here on Friday, April 28th at 10:30. We're having a big celebration of our victory, and we've invited the governors from the participating pueblos and the governor from the state of New Mexico and all sorts of other people who participated in our victory.
Fantastic. Mara and Jean, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing a little bit about recycling on Cochiti Pueblo. We really appreciate it. Now let's go to a phone call. We've got Patty in Rapid City, South Dakota, tuned in on Keeley. Earlier in the show, we were talking about clean water. Patty, you have something you'd like to share about water?
Yes, I do. I lived on the Fort Peck Reservation back in the 90s, and there was a high incidence of kidney cancer and children 12 years old and under on dialysis, and it was related to the water. The water by the river, by the Missouri River, was brown, and they said it was rust. It came out of the faucets brown. It turned everybody's bathtubs, toilets, and sinks brown. And they said it was rust, and they had expensive filtration systems put in for the laundromat. But that was it. And I lived further down towards Canada near Sitting Bull's old campsite. And the water smelled like rotten eggs. And the tribal president, Caleb Shields, came to my house and he said, "Patty, don't drink the water. I used to live on this land. It's poison." He said, "It's from seepage from oil wells." And it was really disgusting. You felt dirty when you took a shower afterwards. And it was that same smell like they were talking about earlier in Arizona, I believe, in New Mexico. So it's everywhere in Indian country.
Yeah, absolutely. Patty, thanks so much for calling in and sharing that. Water is definitely an issue that we have paid close attention to, particularly this past year, as folks were at Standing Rock. They were fighting the pipeline, deeply concerned about the water. I know in Fort Peck, the Keystone XL pipeline is scheduled to go not through the reservation, but right by a body of water on the Fort Peck Reservation. And so it's definitely an issue that we will be following closely in the coming months and probably doing a full hour on, is learning more about water in our communities and protecting water and things like that. Let's take one more call. We've got Nancy in Albuquerque tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Nancy.
Hello. I really appreciated your show. I just wanted to mention to your guests that there is glass recycling in Albuquerque. Just call 311 and you can find all the locations closest to you if you live in Albuquerque.
Yeah, absolutely. You can recycle glass in Albuquerque. We were talking with folks at from the Cochiti Pueblo. I do know that they don't pick up at the curb glass recycling. You have to haul it yourself to a recycling center. But Nancy, thanks so much for giving us a call and sharing that. Tuned in on KUNM. Right now, I want to take a moment to look at a situation in Clyde River on Baffin Island in Nunavut, Canada. An energy company would like to start doing seismic testing to explore for oil, but the community that lives in the area is very concerned about how the testing will affect their subsistence hunting and fishing. I spoke with Jerry Natanine. He is a former mayor of Clyde River, and he is Inuit. And I asked him what kind of consultation happened with seismic testing. And I'll give you a heads up, the phone line is not the best.
The company, when they came visiting here, they held meetings and what they call public consultations, where they came in and they told us, "This is what we're going to do, and this is how a seismic ship operates, and the blastings, all that kind of stuff." They told us about that, and we were asking them questions because they were world-renowned scientists. They brought in four scientists that were world-renowned. You know, they had books here and there and all this. So we were asking them simple questions, you know, the things that we were concerned about. Things like, will the seismic cannon blasting change migration routes of narwhals? Those are the longhorn narwhals called unicorn whales. Will the migration routes change? And their answer would be like, we're not marine biologists. We don't know. Or, a question was asked, will the shrimp, sea planktons, are they going to explode from the cannon blast? Their answer was, you know, no one knows the answer to that. That's the kind of stupid answer they were giving us. And then from that, we realized that they don't care about affecting ecology or how our lives might be impacted. And that's when we started to realize that, you know, we're not going to support this.
That was Jerry Natanine. He is the former mayor of Clyde River. And right now the case is in the Canadian courts and is expected to take several months before an approval or denial of the testing will happen. We'll be following that closely and we will keep you updated on what's going on up there. Now, let's talk about solar power. Joining us now is Nick Tilson. He is the executive director of Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation, and Nick is a citizen of the Oglala Lakota Nation. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Nick.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
So Thunder Valley is celebrating Earth Day with a solar project. Before we get into the solar project, just for our listeners who maybe don't know, what is the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation?
Absolutely. Yeah, so Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation is a Oglala Lakota-led community development corporation here on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation that's dedicated to designing, planning, and building sustainable communities through the lens of our Indigenous values. And Thunder Valley has been around for 10 years, you know, building sustainable communities. We also have what we call an ecosystem of opportunity of seven different initiatives that include food sovereignty, Lakota language revitalization, social enterprise, sustainable housing, youth leadership development, regional equity, these different initiatives that collectively create opportunities for the Oglala Lakota people. And so our organization is located here on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation and led by Native people here, by myself and others, to uplift our people out of poverty and create opportunity for the next generation, and to do it in context of our culture, in context of meeting the basic needs of our people, and potentially being a national and international example for what can happen as we need to build sustainable communities, not just on Pine Ridge, but from around the world.
Yeah, you're really leading the way with this initiative. Solar power. What kind of solar power do you have? What kind of projects are you working on?
Yeah, so we set some big goals. So we set some pretty big sustainability goals for Thunder Valley and in this 34-acre development. And one of our big goals was in the development work that we're doing, we want to produce 100% of the energy that we need on site here, and we want it to be 100% renewable energy. And that's one of our goals up here in the development because, one, we recognize that it's one of our Indigenous values to be more connected to the environment, have a less of an impact on the environment. Plus, the very fact is that we're doing new construction, new development, the building of new communities. And when we're doing it in a time where global climate change is a reality. And so if we're going to be developing communities, we better be taking the current issues of the time into consideration. And so this is kind of the beginning of what Thunder Valley is doing in solar. So what's happening today, and it's what's happening yesterday and today and into tomorrow, is Thunder Valley is installing a 26-kilowatt system here as part of a solar training program, where we have Thunder Valley's workforce development program and community members learning how to install solar panels, learning how to install bracketing. And the idea is through these trainings, we're going to build the capacity at home here at Thunder Valley and then on Pine Ridge to begin doing solar installations for the whole development at Thunder Valley, but also, you know, just build the core of Native people that have the capacity to install solar and have the skills to install solar not just on Pine Ridge, but eventually throughout Indian Country. And some of our partners of how we're doing this is really great. We have a handful of different partners. Mosaic, which is a solar financing company, helped sort of convene some of these partners. Then we also have SunPower, which is a manufacturer of the solar panels that we're using. Another local partner is Genpro out of Rapid City and Sturgis that actually does solar installs and training some of our crew. And then Fronius is one of our partners who are the manufacturer of the inverters that convert the actual electric solar power to electric. So that's kind of what we have going on here at Thunder Valley. You know, big picture goals of doing net zero, 100% clean energy for all people, but doing it methodically of building the capacity of our people at home and meeting our development goals here at Thunder Valley.
So my question is, how much is a 26 kilowatts? I mean, how much will that provide energy for? Are we talking about one house or, larger area?
Yeah, so the 26 kilowatt system that we're doing here at Thunder Valley is we have about a 2,000 square foot office here at Thunder Valley, along with another 2,000 square feet of our workforce development and training center. And then we have our sustainable agriculture education center, and we're installing solar on top of that. So, no, I mean, collectively, this is providing power. You know, it's going to end up providing power for closer to about 6,000 square feet of space that we're operating a variety of different programs. And this particular system will offset our energy usage by about 65% in this particular install. And then, of course, for the whole development, our goals are closer to 100%. But we're doing it basically methodically and planning it out over time. So, if you talk to the person at Thunder Valley that's going to be cutting the bill, we're going to show a reduction in our energy bill here at Thunder Valley probably by 65%. But more importantly than that, we would have had built the skills of a bunch of our local people in our workforce to have the skills to be able to do this. Plus, I think in the bigger context of the whole issue is we're producing our own energy here, right on site with the sun itself. And this is the kind of activity, this is the kind of action that we need to take in Indian Country if we're fighting pipelines and we're fighting destructive energy companies and destructive energy policy that puts our communities on the hot seat. So, you know, in many ways, this is Thunder Valley's type of action that we're taking, is that we believe that absolutely 100% we have to be fighting the pipelines and we got to be fighting the destructive industries, but we also have to start building the communities and the solutions of tomorrow.
Right.
And that's a big part of what this solar project is all about too.
Right, because there's a lot of discussion at Standing Rock about jobs and how the pipelines provide jobs. And so I imagine providing more jobs on the Pine Ridge Reservation, or even the potential for jobs with skills and things like that, is something that is very valuable to your community. The last time we had you on the show, Nick, Thunder Valley was just getting, I know you said you've been around for about 10 years, but you were just breaking ground on one of your projects. And one of the things that you shared was that, you know, that you have big problems in Pine Ridge, but you want to approach big problems with big solutions. You've been approaching everything from language revival to housing issues. Since we've last talked to you, Standing Rock has happened. I'm wondering if you've thought much about your approach, this big, all-encompassing approach, and how that might be able to be applied to the big issue of our environment, of our Earth being in trouble.
100%. I mean, it's in many ways, it's the lens, right? So, Thunder Valley operates on on the principles of triple bottom line principles of people, planet, and prosperity. What that means is that every single project that we do, both in whether it be in solar, sustainable housing, language revitalization, community development, that we go through a process to make sure that every decision that we make and every project that we make, it's going to be beneficial for the people, it's going to be good for the planet, and it's going to create prosperity, and that those things are all interrelated with each other. And when we do projects that are in that space, then we end up are able to move forward and make decisions. And so, you know, what would happen in Standing Rock, we have this, you know, huge entire national and international movement of indigenous people that have come together that myself and my organization was really involved in a lot too. And we recognize that these things are connected, right? That the issue happening in Standing Rock and these unsustainable energy industries that continue to hurt our environment and hurt our lands, that we have to fight them, you know, on the front lines, but we also, part of the front lines is that we also have to be building the sustainable solutions of tomorrow. And that's the powerful thing about solar, is some people get overwhelmed and thinking, you know, the energy companies have jobs and they have power and they have all these different things. The reality is the fastest growing jobs market in America that is going to trump the oil industries is the solar, that's going to trump the oil industries is the solar industry. It's one of the fastest growing markets in America, and it's one of the fastest growing markets in America that can create jobs, reduce climate change. And so there's a direct correlation to building sustainable communities like we're doing here at Thunder Valley, creating solar opportunities. It's a way to, you know, directly challenge the power structure that is these unsustainable industries. And because part of the other element is not just solar, but energy in general beginning to be democratized, putting renewable energy back into the hands of the power of the communities and the people, like we're doing here at Thunder Valley, it creates a way for us to combat these companies. And there's light at the end of the tunnel. This is an issue that 100% that we can win. And when we think about our impact on the environment, as indigenous people, we really got to be thinking of people, planet, and prosperity in the cross intersections of these different issues, so that as we create solutions for our communities and for our people, we're making sure that we're creating solutions that are a reflection of our relationship to Mother Earth and to into the global climate challenges that we're faced with.
Mm-hmm. I read that you have a variety of other projects in the pipeline. Very funny. But including a geothermal greenhouse. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Thunder Valley has a comprehensive food sovereignty initiative here at Thunder Valley that's focused on let's create systems that can feed our entire nation. And how we're making steps towards that is Thunder Valley has a sustainable agriculture education center, and within that center, it's a poultry-based system with eggs, community gardens, nut, fruit trees, along with a geothermal greenhouse. And it's not entirely geothermal. It's actually ground-sourced heat pump greenhouse where you're dug down into the earth, and we have pipes that are going through the earth and pumping that heat up into the greenhouse. And the idea is that in the climate that we're in, extreme temperatures, right, on Pine Ridge, it can get 30 below sometimes and 120 in the summertime, is that we have to, if we're going to grow our own food and meet the needs of our people, that we have to be able to adapt to the changing climate. And the geothermal, or a ground source heat pump greenhouse that we're doing, is creating a way for us to be able to have starter plants. And, you know, we could be producing, technically, in the northern plains, we could be producing fruit trees and lemons and oranges and those types of citrus-based, you know, things that would help provide food for our people. And so the Sustainable Agriculture Education Center within the Food Sovereignty Initiative at Thunder Valley is about piloting different models of sustainable agriculture that are better for, you know, that can help feed our people, pull the energy that's there in a sustainable way, and provide a system that hopefully is repeatable to different Teochebes, extended families and clans in different communities throughout our Indian country. And so it's a really low-tech system. That's the thing that we really gunned for, was like creating a low-tech system that, you know, different families could pick up. And, you know, we're piloting that system here at Thunder Valley. And so we want people to learn from it. And we want to share what works and what doesn't work here at Thunder Valley, just like everything else that we're trying to do.
Absolutely. What are you most excited about? Which project is really you're really excited about in the coming future?
So we have a couple projects. I mean, I'm excited about everything that we're doing. Because kind of what's happening is after, you know, and this is something I'd like to say to the listeners too, is Thunder Valley got to the place that it's at because we engaged our people to create a vision for themselves. And because we put so much energy into the visioning process and then into planning, we're beginning to see the implementation of that vision. Solar being installed, sustainable agriculture center being built, sustainable housing construction is underway. So collectively, these are the things I'm up about. And I think that when we put intent into our communities and in the back into the power of the people, we can accomplish anything that we put our minds to.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, sorry to cut you off there. Unfortunately, once again, we have run out of time. But thanks so much to all of our guests, Laurel Morales, Nick Tilson, Jean Cahey, and Mara Matheson. We're back on Monday with a show about the resilience Indigenous experience. I'll put links to all of the things that we talked about today up on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. Thanks so much to the Native America Calling crew. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our host is Tara Gatewood. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Derek Toledo engineered our show today. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good weekend.
Yat e needs east the Yego Bahanosin, and then he knows Sethin Linied up its east Bahans and no. Besoch Anna Nilitha, Binyaba had it elit Archeliz at Libby. Art out the night a kidnahal patients the case of Beeja. www.medicaid.gov. Edo that Bish Bahane 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Aheha.
Support made possible by the Utah Office of Tourism, announcing the Four Corner School of Outdoor Education. Located at 7,100 feet near the base of the Abajo Mountains in Monticello, Utah, the school's Canyon Country Discovery Center campus is an ideal location for your next tour or vacation. You can learn about Utah's unique canyon country through day trips or week-long adventures. Also available to host meetings, retreats, family reunions, and weddings. Information and reservations at fourcornerschool.org.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.